Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to welcome you to the City Council meeting for the City of Cedar Hills. Today is Tuesday, October the 18th, 2016. I currently have 7 p.m. I'd like to call our meeting to order. First thing we need to do tonight is... which will be given by Council Member Zapala. And then our pledge will be led by one of our scouts tonight, Brennan Tripp. So, Mr. Zapala.
Our dear Heavenly Father, we're grateful to be here in this great city and in this great country. We ask thy blessing on those who serve our country overseas, especially as well as in our local police and fire services, that they may be kept safe as they protect our country and our citizens. We ask that thou wouldst bless us tonight with thy spirit, that we may be able to be inspired to make good decisions that are in the interests of our residents. And we ask these favors in the name of thy Son, Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen. Brennan?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Brennan, if you want to come to support, I've got a little token of our appreciation. All right, very good. Now, Council, I need someone to make a motion on the approval for tonight's agenda, as is, or if you want to make an amendment.
I move that we approve the agenda as is.
Okay, I have a motion to accept the agenda as is. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Motion's been seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much. Public comments. This is where we let anyone come and talk on whatever they would like to speak on for up to 3 minutes. Is anyone that would like to come and do that tonight? I didn't see anyone had signed the sheet in back. If you missed that, now's your opportunity. No? If not, then I will move on. First item in the presentation's recognition area is we have our friends from Alpine School District who are here. Yes, and so Rob Smith, who's the business superintendent, I think, assistant superintendent.
I'm just Rob.
I don't want to shortchange you. I know that you're the assistant superintendent. And so he's going to report on and discuss the school bond that is coming up on the election. And so, Rob, if you want to come up to the pulpit.
Thank you, Mayor, and members of the council. It's great to be with you tonight. I also have with me Dr. Vicki Clark, one of our supervisors of elementary schools. She was the principal at Central Elementary School before we pulled her into the district office to lead other principals. So grateful to have Vicki here with me as well. And just, you know, one of my responsibilities, not just the CFO for Alpine, but also as government relations. And so I reached out to the mayor and said, hey, I'd like to come present to the council and give them a short report on their school district, some of the good things going on, some of the things we need to improve on, and an upcoming issue that we have before the voters, and that's the bond. And so he graciously said, yes, why don't you come over on the 18th? And I said, wonderful, we'll be there. So it's great for me to come. This hopefully will be, again, one of many in the future. And I hope that as we come and we work together to serve the people of this community, that you'll get to know me. I'll be able to better get to know all of you. And the closer we work together, I think the citizens are the benefactors. If we're working together mutually, and then I think the residents benefit. So with that, I've got just a short presentation. Well, what's happening in Alpine School District? Maybe.
Too far away?
There we go. Greg, perfect. This is our growth over the last 16 years. And you can see that each one of those bullets that are there, each one of those data points, are a five-year projection. I'm right now in that cycle. I've got my first draft of our next 5 years. And then the black line, which is a little difficult to see on this slide, with the square box in the middle, that's what actually happened. And the colors are the projection, or what we thought would happen. So over the past few years, you would say, well, yeah, Rob, you're pretty close, but why are there variances? Well, there's many reasons for that. Number one, we have charter schools in the state of Utah. Enacting legislation was passed in 1998. They really started coming into our community in about 2000. John Hancock, I think, and Timpanogos Academy. But every time that I'm off just a little bit, that's usually when there's a charter school that opens. So one of the things we learned from that is we need to start including charter school enrollment in our projections. Thereby, we can narrow that focus and hopefully have a smaller deviation. What else has happened? What happened back in 2008-09? We had the Great Recession, and you can see that line actually started to flatten out. Fewer people were having children. And with the millennials and some of the decisions made by that generation, fewer are having children. And so even in Utah, even in Cedar Hills, in our conservative community that have strong families and usually large families, we're starting to see a decline in the number of births. Well, that translates into a decline in the number of students. Yet at the same time, we have probably the greatest growth in the history of Northern Utah County occurring right now at the same time. So I took this chart and I broke it down, if we can go to the next slide, just a little bit further. And I said, okay, if we're staying our normal growth pattern, how many students will be coming over the next 4 years? And then if I look at what actually happened this year, we projected about 1,600 students growth. We actually had over 2,000 new students to Alpine this year. And I said, if I projected that out with that deviation, what would happen over the next 4 years? Well, you can see the two different lines there and the gap in between. The difference between those lines is a couple thousand students. Okay? So will we be 80,000 students in the next 4 years? Yes, we might be 80,000 in the next 2.5 years, depending on how fast the county continues to grow. Most of the growth, as you know, is occurring in Lehigh, Saratoga Springs, and Eagle Mountain. So I wanted to show that to you. We track this information, and this is available out on our website so that you as a resident could pull that up and say, hey, what is Alpine thinking about enrollment growth? We'll go to the next slide. If you'll remember, back in July, we mailed out to all of our households, over 75,000 households in the Alpine School District community. It was a multi-newspaper looking thing that has all of the basics for the start of school. This was the center section of that, and we said, hey, we're studying a bond. Here's what we have done over the past three bonds. So down in the section on the far right, you'll see, let's see if I can get that to work, this section right here. We wanted to be accountable with you with everything we said we would do in the 2001 bond, we have completed. Everything we said we would do in 06, we've completed. In 2011, we have the last project that's under construction. It's Grove Crest Elementary School, and if you haven't been by, it's in Pleasant Grove. It's a wonderful project, and we're almost up to finish masonry height, and we're going to get that dried in before the winter comes, so we can continue working this winter, and we'll move into the school over spring break next April. We talked about growth. We talked about how many new students were coming. Again, more students are coming than what we had projected on the last year's projection. We talked about age of buildings. One of the things, I was at the Eagle Mountain City Council, and a council member said, hey, Rob, yeah, that's great, but didn't you guys just do a new roof at Lone Peak High School? And I said, oh no, Lone Peak is over 20 years old. The last project we did was add on a gymnasium, and then we added on a PE facility and a weight room. Those are the last two projects, but we've not replaced the roof. We use a single-ply membrane roof. Their life is 20 years. So it's time to replace the roof, which is one of the projects we have here on this bond. So a couple other things on this mailer that came out. And again, this was to elicit discussion in the community and feedback for the board. We talked about interest rates.
We have historically low interest rates. It's a good time to borrow if you do choose to borrow. We also talked about
the school district's AAA rating, something I'm very proud of as the CFO. We put ourselves on a path a few years ago to achieve that. We are the first government entity outside of Salt Lake County to achieve a AAA rating. And we're delighted, but we're not satisfied. Of the four areas that we were rated, that you can be rated AAA, we're only AAA in three of the four, which means we have work to do in that fourth area. But of the 13,900 school districts across the nation, there are only 73 who are AAA rated. And we are among that group. And that speaks to financial conservatism, good projections, good data, great communities, a growing community, a growing student population, etc. And I'm really proud of that. That's like you having an individual credit score of 850. So we shared that news with our folks. And then finally, we talked about land acquisition and what we needed to do to acquire land. Hopefully, in planning with cities, we meet regularly with the cities that are growing out west and try to put schools in neighborhood settings so that we plan the walking, we plan the biking, we plan the roads, we plan the infrastructure together to lessen the cost, again, to the taxpayer who's paying the bill. So that came out in July. Got a lot of feedback. We surveyed all 75,000 households. We received about 6,000 responses after this. And just asked, hey, how are we doing? What do we need to do better? What's your thoughts on a bond? Would you support a bond, et cetera? The overwhelming response was, yes, we will support it if there's no tax increase, in essence. We went out to did any of you respond to that survey? Anybody get that survey here in the council? Okay. We then hired an outside firm to go out and survey registered voters throughout the community. About 1,200 were surveyed. And they also responded and said, with the ballot question that you have on the handout, and I'll talk to the handout here in just a minute, hit cold with no data. Here's what the ballot says. Would you support or not support? 59% just shown the ballot question with no information said that they would support. Once they were given information about our growth, keeping commitments, there would not be a tax rate increase with this proposed bond. 74% of those said, we will support you. So that's the data we've received. We've held focus groups between Vicki, our colleagues. We've done probably 200 presentations, Kiwanis Club, senior groups, city councils, anybody and everybody who listens, so we can inform them on what's happening in their school district. And the response has been fairly positive to this point. Okay, next. Some people say, well, Rob, how can you do what you are proposing to do without a tax rate increase? Well, this is a picture of our debt service profile. And what I've tried to do is, in a growing community, I've tried to create steps. This is the current year bond payment, and we're paying just over $44 million of principal. So we're trying to repay that very rapidly. The debt then steps down, and I create that's to me, I call that a step, a gap, a hole. It depends on your terminology. And then we create that going down so that we can layer new bonds without raising the tax rate. As long as I stay under this black line here, there will not be an increase in the tax rate. Each one of those colors represents mortgages, or that's another term for bond, but a mortgage is something that I can relate to and many in the community can relate to. You have a 30-year mortgage or a 15-year mortgage. We issue our bonds for, even though they're authorized for 20 years, we issue them about in 15 years. We want to pay them off fairly quickly, thereby saving interest and continuing this step down as we continue to grow to try to be able to continue building, to reinvest in older communities like Grove Crest, the rebuild we're doing there, without raising taxes over the current rate. Okay, to the bond projects. Hey, Greg, go to the next slide. Actually, let me hit this before I go back to the projects on page one. The real reason we can do it is because of accelerated growth. Alpine School District's assessed value, new homes, new businesses, et cetera, in our community, $2 billion increase this year. That's a double-digit increase. That's really the primary reason. There's more value for which to pay the debt service. Therefore, the rate needed decreases, or in our proposal, is slightly less fully implemented than it currently is. Number two, I talked about that already, 20-year bonds. Paid off in about 15 years. We also look for opportunities to refinance. I think you've probably looked at those opportunities to refinance bonds, to capture low rates, and pass those savings on to taxpayers. There have been two occasions where we actually have called bonds in when we have had some cash available. We've called bonds, thereby avoiding the interest paying in the future. So we've done a series of things like that to try to rapidly pay those things off. Number three, that's the structure. In the layering of the bonds, and then finally the AAA rating. Greg, can you go to the next slide? This is our website, but I brought a handout for you, and I'll just talk to this briefly. This was prepared by some of our team members. I think it's straightforward. It's easy to understand. The graphic is very, very good. We have some talented staff in Alpine School District, and it was printed in our print shop in the school district. It shows you the projects in the four phases. The first phase of projects, we start off with a new high school. We opened Sky Ridge High School in Lehigh. I don't know if any of you have been to Sky Ridge, but we opened that this fall. It was built for 2,400 students, and we opened this fall with 2,300 students. Westlake High School this fall, October 1st count, we have just under 2,900 students at the high school in Saratoga Springs. We need a new high school. If I could start building yesterday, we would. But we always are behind in a growing community. We always are behind in a community that is conservative. We don't want to overbuild. So what do? To meet the needs? We put in portable classrooms. We put in satellite units to try to deal with that growth short term until then we can financially build a building. Okay, so that's some of the things that we do. We need a high school quickly. Two elementary schools in Eagle Mountain and Lehigh. We have several schools that are over 1,000 students. Surprise to Cedar Hills. We've had Cedar Ridge that's been over 1,000 before we built Deerfield. And both are hovering in that 800 to 1,000 students as our community continues to maintain a population. But we have several schools now well over 1,000. The elementary schools, we build them, then we then do the boundary adjustment, split those into about 600-700. That then allows opportunity for growth for several years to come. Timpanogos High School is very similar to Lone Peak. It was built 20-plus years ago, and so we're doing some roof projects as well as purchasing property in the high-growth areas. So that's phase one. Phase two, new elementary school, new middle school. I want to talk about the two projects at the end of phase two, Lehigh High School rebuild. The communities that have older schools, they deserve to have those newer facilities that are seismically safe, just as well as the newer communities. We don't build old schools. We build new schools. And so we put a master plan over the years to rebuild AF, which many residents of Cedar Hills attend. Pleasant Grove, and also Lehigh. Why Lehigh and not AF and not PG? Well, because Lehigh High School now is its lowest enrollment that it's been in over a decade. Now's the time to go back when the student population is lower than it is to go in when there was 2,800 students at Lehigh High School. So that's why that you see that early in this bond. You also see,
What is their population?
1,400.
So yeah. Way down.
Yeah. So and that's anytime you see a new school open, you'll see that as they split, you'll see that population go down, and then that allows for growth to occur over the next number of years. It's a great question. Thank you. Mountain View High School. Mountain View's 30 years old. We have some programmatic issues within the building that we need to go back and refurbish and renovate. Much like you and I, we put new carpet in our house. We put a new roof on our house after a certain number of years. That's what we do in our houses for school. We go back in and renovate, repair, reinvest
to make sure that those are viable for facilities for the next 20, 30 years. We build facilities for 50 plus years. Okay, that's different than some of the charter school models that are built for 20 to 25 years. Okay, one of the things that you might say, well, Rob, what are you doing to contain cost? We're concerned about the cost of schools. We're concerned about how fancy they are. And I hear that from many people. We went this year out and met with several charter school builders, operators, financiers, and said, what can we take back to make sure we are being wise with your money? We went down to Washington School District, who has, in the state of Utah, has one of the lowest building costs per square foot of any of the school districts. We said, what can we learn from them? We've taken that. We also just got information from Cache School District about the new high school they just built. And we compared that with the construction costs for our new high school we just opened. So I want to share a little bit of that data with you, because that's something I get asked often from city council members, mayors, members of the community. We just opened Sky Ridge High School in Lehigh. The total construction price, 344,000 square foot facility, $58,056,407 was the construction cost. Design cost and engineering, $2,005,000. Utility hookups and impact fees that we have to pay to the city, $1,003,000. Furniture, fixtures, and equipment, just a little over $2,000,000. The construction cost per square foot was $168.77. And that's an important number to remember. $168.77. Yes,
what
question.
What was the total cost of that?
Total cost, $58,056,407 divided by 344,000 square feet. If your calculator works like mine, it should be $168.77. The total cost, when you add in design, utility, and furniture, fixtures, and equipment, $185.93. We just opened our last elementary school in Lehigh, River Rock Elementary School. It's an 80,000 square foot facility. Cost of construction was $14,471,074, which was a price per square foot of $180.89. So we actually built a high school at a lower cost than an elementary school. An elementary doesn't have the stadium, the ball fields, the auditorium, the gyms, and so forth, the tech classes that we have in our high schools. So we are working very hard to make sure those costs are contained. One of the ways we do that is to, again, learn from others. Another way we do that is to repeat the same facility. So our design and engineering costs are lower, and as builders build it, the subcontractors give us better pricing because they know it. Very similar to the method the LDS Church uses. We repeat, thereby we save dollars and contain cost. So I just wanted to share a couple of those, as well as one comparison. Cache School District, they just opened a new high school this year. Ridgeline High School. We build our high schools, I said earlier, for about 2,400 students. Theirs is 100,000 square feet smaller. They build their high schools for about 1,400 to 1,600 students. So their facility was 243,626 square feet. Their construction cost was $45,402.152. So if you divide those two, their cost per square foot was $186.36 as compared to ours at $168. So again, we are trying, we monitor that data, and we are looking for ways to continually refine, improve, and make sure that your dollars stretch as far as they can. With that, there's more data on the bond. You've got the other phases. I'm not going to spend time going into each one of those unless you have questions. Greg, hit that last slide. This is the one I just talked through. So this, in essence, says what I just shared with you from my notes. Final slide, I think, just says thanks for the opportunity to come in. Hit it one more time. And then what other questions do you have for me that you've heard from residents, from community? We'll take them.
I noticed this, there's no element in there or portion for land. Is that correct?
There is. They're actually significant. So you go back to the front of this infographic. In the first phase, there's a significant portion for land. I want to say it's $6 million in that first phase. And then in phase three, there also is a section for land. So yes, we do have about $10 million in the bond for land acquisition.
No, but I was referring to your $165 a square foot did not include land. That's building up.
That is correct, because we purchased land in prior years, sometimes with cash, sometimes with bond funds. We've even done a few things like we did this year. We had 43 acres here in Pleasant Grove, just south of Cedar Hills here. We sold, the board looked at that and said, hey, that's an investment that the community's made. We have two charter schools right there. We have the Grove Crest that we just rebuilt. We don't think we're going to need a school, looking at the data, looking at the projections. Let's sell that asset, and let's use that asset to acquire land in other areas. So that's something that we have done. We've tried to use assets to provide that buffer in assets, and we may have purchased that land for a much lower cost. So that's why land is not comparable in the construction costs.
So your Eagle Mountain High School that's on your phase one, which is coming up fairly quickly.
Yep.
Do you own the property?
We do.
I was going to say, if you don't, the trust owns a bunch of property out there that you better get.
We're negotiating on one final piece for that property. It's a 10-acre parcel. Been working with State Trust Lands as well as Ivory Development, who they have contracted with to acquire that final piece. So, yeah, and we have commitment from Trust Lands for three additional sites on the city center side. And we've been working with Troy Harold and his group from Trust Lands on the Saratoga side for two additional school sites.
Good.
So, yes, we're on it.
You're on top of it.
I've got a few questions, if that's okay. What kind of interest rate are you hoping to get on the $387 million bond?
Great, great question. The last two bonds we've issued prior to getting the AAA rating that we received this year, we issued at 1.99 and 2.33.
Wow.
But if you know me at all, I'm going to be a conservative in my modeling. So for the numbers guys who want spreadsheets and models, happy to share. This was done by an independent group. Mm-hmm. We estimated 4% as the coupon rate on the bonds. Mm-hmm. If I can beat that, then the tax rate I need goes down.
When do you lock in on – do they lock in each phase?
Each phase, we competitively bid, and then we take the lowest bid.
My concern is we don't know what the economy is going to do, but it could go up. You know, there's a talk of it going up. Is there any way to purchase a lock early? Like, for instance, at the company I'm with right now, we purchased a lock 1 year in advance, and it only cost us 18 basis points.
Really?
Pretty amazing, yeah.
That's fantastic.
So we're talking. I mean, it's very advantageous to us. I don't know which banks do we use for Alpine School District.
When we issue bonds, we get usually 12 to 14 bids, and so they're the big players nationally. You've had UBS, you've had Wells Fargo,
Chase.
You've had JP Morgan Chase. You've had the big ones out there that bid on our bonds.
I think, were you asking who their financial advisor is?
No, which banks they go with. But that's just a suggestion. You may want to ask about that, because not too many people that I've heard of have done that. And I asked, and they said, well, not too many people have asked. And it turned out to be really good for us, because it's worth 18 basis points to secure for a year in advance. But anyway, how long have you been the CFO?
15 years. This is my 15th year. So 14 years, moving into 15.
Well, I've noticed how good your reports are over the years, and how easy to understand they are. So great job.
Thank you.
Okay. Council, any other questions here?
For me, that was very detailed. I appreciate you coming
tonight. I do have one more, and that is, I am curious. So Alpine, I just don't know this. I like to ask questions I don't know about an entity when they come in. Alpine School District, who are the owners of that? Is that owned by the residents in total, or who would be the owners of that group?
Great question. Alpine is a political subdivision, a limited liability corporation of the state of Utah.
Okay.
So in essence, the corporation is the school district entity itself, but we work for you.
But it's the state of Utah official entity.
Technically is the entity that owns, because we are a subdivision of the state.
The reason I ask, I assume there's a huge difference between the value of the assets and the value of the liabilities for the district at this point, with all the years of paying off bonds and such. So it's the state that has that asset.
The school district's independent. The state, I don't believe, rates our assets as part of the state of Utah, its book. But in essence, we are an independent corporation. We have our own assets and own claim to those liabilities and assets. Mm-hmm. But the state is our parent.
It's the shareholder. Yep.
That's
ours. Thanks.
Rob, this is very helpful. You and I sat down with Superintendent German about a year ago, and so I've been studying this for about a year and met with the Utah Taxpayers Association, and I'm proud that all of my fellow mayors that I can see that are in the Alpine District have endorsed this, and I'll be voting for it as well. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Okay, so I do not see Principal Bromley here. If she does show up, I will still allow her to come and report and give us an update on the high school. So on the consent agenda, we have two items. We have an appointment to the Cultural Arts Citizens Advisory Committee of Robin Finch, and we also have minutes from one council meeting, which was September the 6th, 2016. So if someone would like to make a motion on the consent agenda, I will take that now.
I move that we approve the consent agenda.
Great. I have a motion to approve. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Motion has been seconded by Mr. Zappala. All those, is there any further discussion? Let's have a vote. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much. Let's move on to city reports and business. Start from Mr. Bunker and then go to my right.
Mayor and Council, I have just a few items. Just want to give you an update on our driving range fence and the activity out there. The poles have been delivered. They are on site to extend the netting to the higher elevation. They were delivered, but there is a delay on the crews that can put those poles in. So we're working with Nils Fugel to get that done. Amazingly enough, Utah had a tornado that hit, which caused a backlog and some need for poles. So that is delaying us a little bit, but they should be up in the next week or two. Flag football playoffs have just finished, and the teen playoffs will finish up next Monday night. We've had a great year for flag football, and we want to thank all the coaches and volunteers and participants that have made this year a great year. And so the soccer program also finished up, and we also had a great season there. So again, we thank the coaches and the referees and everybody who participated with that. Ski bus is starting to fill up. We already have 39 participants. The bus can only hold 49. So if you want to get involved in the ski bus, or you have a child that wants to be involved, they need to hurry because we only have 10 spots. Our junior jazz registration is now open, and we are seeing some incredible numbers so far. We added a second grade program, and that is one of the groups that is really accelerating as far as signups. So if you know someone who wants to join junior jazz, now's the time. As far as the Vista Room and the availability of our event center, it is being booked up very quickly for events during December. And there's only 4 open days in December, excluding Sundays. So if you want a night here at the Vista, then please get a hold of Greg and his crew, and they will get you set up. We are officially a passport acceptance facility at the City of Cedar Hills, and we processed 7 passports in the first week and 4 so far this week. We've had dozens and dozens of calls for people who want to come in and get their passports, either a new passport or renewed, and you can do that here at the city office. And we will be sending out some flyers to different businesses in the area to make sure that they all understand that we are a passport acceptance facility now. We have a Timpanogos Special Service District meeting on Thursday night, so I'll go to that and report back on that. That's all I have.
Thank you very much. Mr. Zappala, would you take a moment if you'd like to?
Just a few brief items. I've begun drafting the State of the City report. It's going to come out a little slower this year than usual, but it's underway, and I'll be getting you updates as that moves forward. And then a nice surprise, I was contacted by Zonda Perry recently. She was very interested in starting a Girls Who Code program in our city. This is a program designed to help close the gender gap among computer science majors. Looks like a really nice program. She's very energetic about it, and I'm excited to get it going in our city.
Thank you. Anything else?
Nope.
Mrs. Reese.
The Parks and Trails Committee will be meeting later this week, and then the Family Festival Committee has a vacancy that they're working on filling, but we plan on meeting in January.
Thank you.
That's it.
All right, thank you. I am trying to fill some vacancies on the Parks and Trails Committee, and so we should have a few more names to present to you guys. My next MAG meeting is in a few weeks, so I don't have anything to report there. And we've not had a Finance Committee meeting, nor a North Point Solid Waste. So that's it. Mr. Bailey.
The Arts Committee is sponsoring their annual date night. It's tentatively on December 2nd. There's a limited number of spots. I believe it was 30, low 30s. So they're going to get it out, published on the web and all that. So if you're interested, know that there's a limited number. So swing dancing is what they're going to be doing, and it's going to be here in the Vista Center. So.
Fantastic. Thank you. Mr. Crawley.
Yeah. North Point Solid Waste Special Service District is meeting November 7th. But I got an email from Roger Harper today saying that they need to meet before then for some reason. He didn't explain why, so I asked him why. So don't really know at this point. An interesting thing that I didn't mention last time, when we were talking about whether, you know, the pros and cons of taking North Point Solid Waste private, one thing that had been discussed was that I had mentioned was each of the cities might get a portion of the value of the business back if we sold it to a private entity. With further research into that, we found out that all the value actually goes to the county. So that argument that was made back then, I just thought for future reference, you know, as we talk about it in the future, if it ever sells or whatnot, then the value all goes to the county. The other side of that coin is when you're thinking about whether to renew or not and stay with North Point Solid Waste Special District, the concept of we've built equity in there kind of goes away for us too, because it's not really our equity. So kind of goes both ways, both arguments. So just future knowledge. When we talk about North Point Solid Waste, it's good for us to know that.
Okay, so. Thank you. Mr. Geddes.
Yes, I'm happy to report that the Utah Valley Dispatch building is going to be open next month. And it's a beautiful facility. I toured it a couple weeks ago. I went and toured it. And it's really quite a facility. So I think the Utah Valley Dispatch folks are all excited about it, and they're going to have a ribbon cutting at 3 in the morning, November 12th or something like that. So
3 in the morning.
So that's when they switch over. They cut the lines and go live. And so that's the least amount of traffic on the 911 lines. So that's how that works.
We expect everyone to be there.
There will be a grand opening in January. So it's actually set January, I think, 12th. But I'll be there for that. The whole council is invited, but I'll get more information as that comes along. But it's a great facility,
okay.
And it's done, almost.
Anything else?
That's it.
Thank you very much. Moving on to scheduled items now. Our first item, which is item number 10, is a discussion on workers' compensation insurance compliance related to subcontractors and vendors. We've got Brian Child from Olympus Insurance who's here with the presentation. So, Brian, time is yours.
Can I just kick off this just real quick?
Sure.
So we've had a discussion internally and with the mayor and council regarding workman's compensation. And this actually has came up. It comes up every year because we get an audit every single year from workman's compensation. And what workman's compensation, our insurance provider, is looking for are groups or individuals who the city employs, we hire, to make sure that they're covered with insurance. And we have been making some good strides in reducing our liability with regard to that. Back in 2014, we were assessed $24,678 in additional premium cost because we had a list of vendors who did not show proof of insurance, workman's compensation insurance. And if they don't show proof, then it falls back on the city. We have to pay that premium, and we have exposure to the risk associated if something were to happen there. In 2016, we are down to $15,810, so that's almost a $9,000 decrease in what we pay. So
we take this serious, that we're trying to save the city, not only dollars today, but risk and in the future. And our premiums have historically been assessed at about 2.35%. But we wanted to go through the requirements. Now, the city council has a decision. You guys can decide that you want to cover our vendors and our subcontractors. You can give staff the direction, hey, don't worry about getting the workman's compensation coverage for them. And you can make that decision that we will cover that risk and we will pay those premiums. They get that list off of our general ledger report. So they actually ask our finance department to provide a general ledger report, and they go through that and find every person or contractor. And if they're not a city employee or a city volunteer, so for instance, the Family Festival volunteers, they're covered. We actually cover their insurance while they're helping us during the event. But if we chose as a city that we want to cover them, we can. Just know that number will increase back up from the 15,000 towards the 24,000 and possibly higher, because we've been working on reducing that exposure to the city. So Brian will explain more about workers' compensation, and then we can talk about questions afterwards.
Thank you, David. Thank you, Mayor and members of the council. It's hard to follow the bond presentation. We're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars, and we'll talk about maybe tens of thousands at the most. But workers' compensation and contractors, it's something we've probably all dealt with at one time or another, as we've been involved in small business or in our capacity here at the city. But don't want to really bore you with the code. I know Dave would probably appreciate this more than anyone, but the Workers' Compensation Act was enacted in 1917. That's what provides statutory protection for employees at work. There's a statutory remedy that we will receive if we're hurt at work. Becoming a statutory employer, and that's what it is called in the Act, occurs to us as a city if we hire someone that doesn't have workers' compensation insurance. If we hire a contractor, a vendor, they come on site and they get injured, and we've hired them and we haven't verified and they don't have workers' compensation insurance, we by default become their employer, which I think David alluded to when WCF, who's our workers' compensation insurance carrier, audits us. They look at essentially who we become a statutory employer to and audit us, accordingly. We pay a premium for that. There's kind of a multiplied effect here, and I apologize, those are a little smaller than I would have liked. So I'm sorry those aren't more legible, but we start with uninsured contractors. If we add their payroll, which becomes our audit exposure that we're going to pay a premium on, and then if those workers get injured, those claims count against us as well. We end up having kind of an exponentially increasing workers' compensation premium, something that in our tight budget environment we want to avoid. To give you a snapshot of the city's current workers' compensation program, which is running really well, by the way, I think that staff's to be commended for this. Our NCCI experience modifier is a 0.82. Is anyone familiar? I don't know if we've got a few who are probably familiar with that. It's comparable to your FICO score in the world of workers' compensation. So a 1.0 is average. It's a C. The lower you get, the better score that is. So an 8.2 is a very good score. And that means when our workers' compensation premium is developed, we're basically getting an 18% discount immediately because of that experience modifier. When underwriters see the positive strides we make in safety and good claims experience, they also have discretionary credits they apply, and so WCF has given us a 0.87 schedule rating or schedule credit, meaning we have another 13% discount on a workers' compensation premium. And then there's also latitude when we're below a 1.0 experience modifier. There are three rate bands in the workers' compensation system. We get the most preferred rate band. So it is very similar to lending, where we're a very good risk, and therefore we get the most competitive cost. Last year, for example, we had one claim for $2,000, a little over $2,276. So things are running very well. In the past 3 years, our premium, and this is premium just for what is rated with the renewal for employees, not including what ends up getting picked up at audit, has decreased by 35%. So our safety culture is working. If we're to look at a real world case study, and this happened to another municipal client, if we were to have another claim, much like we've had in 2014, we had a very similar claim as we did in 15, $2,000. If we were to have another one this year, say a cut to the hand, but then if we were to have a major injury, what happened with this other city is a contractor hanging Christmas lights fell off of a ladder. It was a fellow in his late 50s, and unfortunately age does often factor into that. The older we are, the harder we fall, unfortunately. So the claim ended up being $214,000. What that does to us on a workers' compensation program is the NCCI, the National Council on Compensation Insurance, much like Experian or those that produce FICO scores, takes that loss data, plugs into their proprietary formula that all workers' compensation carriers use. And essentially, if in this case, and it happened with this other city, their EMOD, we call it in the trade, went to a 2.0, meaning their premium is developed and then it is doubled to start. Our schedule rating with WCF, or with any carrier we would be with, Travelers, whomever, would be removed, so we'd be left without a credit there. We'd be at a 1.0. And then our rate band, it's like not qualifying for preferred lending rates again. We'd be moved back to standard. And so the effect here is that our premium could, in essence, nearly triple if we had a really severe claim. Now, there is a little bit of underwriter discretion here, and if it's an unavoidable thing, like we've seen with public safety when they get injured, we get quite a bit more leeway there. But when it's a contractor and they view that as something that is an avoidable thing, or we can require insurance from a contractor and we choose not to, we often don't get that same kind of beneficial treatment when they apply their discretionary credit. So this is kind of our worst case scenario if we had a black swan event. The things we can do to avoid having this, there's really three things. We can require contractors to have workers' compensation insurance, even folks like myself that work with the city. If we have sole proprietors that work for us, individuals that don't have any employees at all, they are able to get a workers' compensation coverage waiver from the Labor Commission. It's $50, and that exempts them from the work comp system, where they can't come back and make a claim against our program. And then we can amend our contracts to be in accordance with these requirements, where owners or directors of contractors can't be excluded from workers' compensation that work on our projects. I know it sounds like we're trying to push something onto a burden onto those that work with the city. But it can insulate us a great deal from risk, and it's a lot of risk that we unfortunately don't have control over, much like if we were to let our contractors operate our motor vehicles, our equipment, while we train city staff to operate these things in a safe manner. We often don't have the same controls in place for contractors, and so it's kind of the same thing with workers' compensation. So I've kind of rushed through that. I didn't want to take a lot of your time on this, but any questions from the council?
I have a question. So if we didn't have any contractors that weren't covered, how would that affect our rates? I think, didn't you say we're around 11,000 right now per year?
Correct, yeah.
So how would that affect us? Would we go down a couple thousand or 1,000 or 500 if we just had zero?
So those figures I provided were the base rates just for employee payroll.
Okay.
So the figures David provided, each year at audit, we're basically paying, I think last year it was $3,000. 15, 8, 10 total.
So it was around 5,000 extra.
Yeah.
And is most of that due to the contractors? How would you say 80% or 60%? What percentage of that $5,000 amount overage would you say is because of the contractors that don't have the insurance?
The two things that get picked up at audit are the delta in our payroll.
Sure.
We end up, you know, having higher payroll.
Right.
But I would imagine it's the overwhelming majority, because if we have new positions, those are probably contemplated at the time of renewal.
Mm-hmm. So we just need to consider that when we're looking at paying someone to come and say perform or help out or whatnot, and they don't have insurance, we need to realize that it's hundreds of dollars that we're paying them more than they're actually earning if they don't have that, and factor that into our costs. I think when we're getting bids, if they don't have it, then we've got to think of how that's going to affect our rates and add that to the cost of them. Or else we could just say we're not going to allow anyone that doesn't have the insurance or a waiver. But
that's our policy, isn't it?
Yeah. Right now, we actually try to verify insurance. Now, there are some groups that we either don't or we can't. But we are trying to reduce that as much as possible. And there's some groups that we say, hey, that's the cost of doing business. Family festival, you know, we cover, if we pay someone at the family festival, if they're a volunteer, we pay them and we know that they're just like an employee for a short period of time, we're going to cover those. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the contractors caught on the audit this year was Water Well Services. They rehabilitated the Harvey Well. And so we went back, and through the contract we had with that company, they were required to provide the insurance. We just didn't have the documentation from them. So we found the documentation, and that was a large contract, and that would have made a substantial increase.
We were able to chase
down their certificate, send that over to the state. They said, hey, check, they're off the list. And so we reduced that. So the other cities, and I think this came up specifically in relationship to our committees and the Family Festival Committee. And I reached out to some other cities, and I know that I think the committee chairs also reached out to some other communities as well. Most of the other communities, as I talked to them, they said, we're at risk. We have exposure for workman's comp. I mean, some of these other cities were, they're not thinking about it. And as they thought about it, they're like, wow, we better get somebody on that. Some of them required insurance, but weren't really looking at the workman's compensation portion of that. But they, you know, this brought this to their attention, and they said, hey, in the future, we're going to do that. One city close to us doesn't run their city celebration days through the city. It's actually an LLC. Strawberry Days LLC has nothing to do with the city. The city doesn't pay anyone. They have a separate entity that might pay, but it's not the city. So they can kind of, they're not on the hook the way we are. Like I say, some cities just said, hey, that's just the cost of doing business for us. We're not going to track that. So that's why I say the council has some discretion here. It really is up to you how you want to approach that.
Mm-hmm. So if I can give some background, because I'm the one who asked for this to be on the agenda. Yes. So David's right. It kind of came up with a family festival. So last year, shortly before family festival, the committee chairs were notified that all of the vendors that we had hired needed to provide either proof of having workers' compensation insurance or a waiver. And if they didn't have the waiver, if they were a sole proprietorship, then they needed to submit an application and a $50 fee for that waiver. And there were some of the bigger companies, like the Carnival Company, that was not an issue, obviously. It became an issue for the three small vendors, and that was the gentleman who oversees the car show, the performing group, the band who performed Saturday night at the festival, and the company that the teen party was using. They rent those big inflatable balls that the kids play in. And so, especially with the car show company, that he said, no city has ever required me to do this before. So he actually withdrew. He was not going to do the car show last year, took us off his website and everything. And as we started working through those, it was determined that the band had coverage through their agent. The Festy Frenzy company, we changed our agreement with them to a rental agreement where we just rented the props. They didn't have their people there on site. And then with the car show gentleman, we ended up paying the $50 fee for his waiver because he makes $250 off of us. So he didn't want to spend another $50 to get this waiver that nobody else had required of him. So Keith Irwin, who was the chair at the time, provided a report at the end of Family Festival and indicated that he had met with staff to find out how this all came about, since they were kind of caught off guard right before Family Festival. And he walked away from that meeting with the understanding that what we did is we gave our auditor a stack of 1099s that we had issued, and that's what they used to audit to see if we had insurance. So his recommendation after researching a little bit more was that we not issue 1099s to somebody that we don't pay $600 or more to, because we're not required to by law. So that's why I asked it to be brought up to the council to see if that was something that we wanted to discuss. The mayor came back to me later saying that he had had some further discussions and it wasn't a 1099 issue, it was an I-9 issue, which didn't make a lot of sense to me because we don't have to get I-9s on subcontractors. So because I was confused at what we were supposed to do and what we're required to do, and every city does it differently and has different insight, I just decided to call David Shaw because he's the expert, right? So Dave Shaw took some time meeting with their employment attorney, and I'm going to turn it over to you because you said there is a way that we can get around this requirement with these small vendors.
Yeah, and it's already been touched upon to a degree, and that is simply contract them, not as subcontractors of the city, but as full-blown contractors, and to impose upon them all insurance requirements that the state requires. And that puts the onus on them to make sure that they're compliant with those requirements. And then we can limit our liability as well with appropriate limitations of liability and disclaimer provisions in the contracts. I don't think that we'll ever face a scenario where our workers' compensation isn't looking to audit everybody. That's what they do. But in order for us to mitigate against our potential liability there, by making them a direct subcontractor of the city, we are taking them on under our umbrella. And I would rather push that liability off onto them, including the provision of workers' compensation certificates and so on and so forth. And if they fall within appropriate exemptions, that's great. That's up to them to demonstrate that to us, not the other way around.
And so the concern was, especially with the car show, was that the guy who runs the car show was very clear that if we were going to make him do something that other cities weren't requiring him to do, he was just kind of done with us. And I know what the chairs have expressed concern that with us being a small city anyway, it's hard enough anyway to get some of these vendors to be interested in our city, especially if we are competing during times with other bigger events. And so I guess we have a couple of options, which is what Mr. Shaw said, you know, form a different kind of agreement where we're not required to obtain this information from them. Or we can continue to do like we did last year, and if it's a sole proprietorship, we just pay the $50 fee ourselves.
Yeah, and that simply becomes a policy call of the council. Paying $50 for a car show may, in your estimation, be well worth it. Mm-hmm. I know in my estimation it is.
Right.
But I like cars. Other people may have differing opinions on that. And so from that perspective, you know, which way the council wants to go, whether you want to pay it directly to make sure there is absolutely no liability, or whether you want to try and push it off onto those smaller vendors and risk them fleeing, that's a policy call.
But you're saying on those smaller vendors, if we enter into that contractual relationship that's different from what we have been doing, we don't have to obtain that proof of coverage.
Well, what we would include in those contracts is a requirement
that they have that coverage, whatever coverage is required by workers' compensation, that they have the appropriate coverage, mm-hmm. and that they demonstrate that to us.
And so, and then if they're a sole proprietor with the waiver, if they don't have the waiver,
if they didn't have the waiver, they'd have to demonstrate the coverage. And so it would be up to them to demonstrate that they have an exemption. It's an appropriate exemption.
Right.
And provide proof of that, or provide proof of the insurance.
And so my question for the council is, if it's going to be these small vendors who we're not paying very much money to, do we want to be willing to just pay that waiver, that $50 waiver, so that way they're not running away from us and saying no, they're not going to participate?
So what is your recommendation at this point? Are you recommending a subcontractor relationship or a contractor relationship or a subcontractor relationship with us paying the waiver? Do you have a recommendation that you're making?
Well, if our insurance agent feels like we are at less risk if we have a proof of coverage or that waiver, then it makes sense to have that. But at the same time, I think we have to recognize as a city that is going to push away some of our smaller vendors who we're not paying very much anyway. And so especially in the family festival situation, I don't know about the arts committee, do we want to make it a policy that if they don't have that waiver and aren't willing to obtain it at their cost, are we willing to do that for them so we can still use their services?
I have an opinion on that. I think that was great that we worked out and paid the $50. So in essence, instead of paying him $250, we paid him $300. And I think we just, the committee that's in charge of that just looks at it and says, is it on our budget? But I think that we should always have him either present proof of coverage or get the waiver and just consider that part of the fee of getting them to come. You know, if someone else is willing to pay $250 or to have us pay $250, and they might do as good of a job, and they have the insurance, then the other group would look at it and say, oh, they're charging us $300, it's $250 plus the $50. So I think we leave it up to the committee whether they have the budget to pay the extra $50, but we do require it. That's my opinion.
The committee asked for direction from council because from what I was told anyway, that there was some concern by staff with the committee paying that fee last year. And so they wanted direction from us as to whether or not that was an acceptable option for them.
Mm-hmm. Is that waiver a one-time?
It's yearly.
One event, or is that good for a
whole? It's good for a year.
Yeah. And they can take that anywhere?
Yes.
Yeah. So just back to the contract issue, we actually went through this very issue with our auditor, and the contract does not exempt the city. Even if we have a contract, and Waterwell Services was one of those contracts, and so is our building inspector. We contract with Don Blackwell, works with Sunrise Engineering. And this was 2 years ago. And Don said he would in his contract. He actually said, I will provide my proof of insurance. Yet he didn't. And when we got audited, the auditor said, well, go get it from him. But if you can't get it from him, you're still on the hook for it. So.
Yeah, but that's a contract administration issue.
That's right.
Not a contractual liability issue. And so there's a difference between having them be a direct subcontractor of the city and an arm's length contractor from a liability perspective. Now, whether or not we actually obtained the proof that they were supposed to provide,
that's
just an administration issue.
Yeah. And until they do, the auditor puts that on the list.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah.
So that's my recommendation is that I don't mind if we require it, but if we have these small vendors who are pushing back, the big vendors are not going to be a problem because they all have it because they know they have to have it. It's the sole proprietors who we're paying a couple $100 to that don't want to pay this fee and are saying that other cities aren't require them to pay that fee. And I'm fine leaving it up to the discretion of the committee. I know that this particular committee asked us to discuss it because they felt like they got some pushback last year and wanted to know on firm ground what they were allowed to do.
So how does the 1099 relate to what you're recommending?
Well, because originally what the chair had come away from his meeting with staff was that they base it off of the 1099s issued. And he said, well, if we pay these guys a couple $100, why don't we just not issue a 1099? Because we don't have to. But that's where you said to me in a conversation we had, it wasn't a 1099, it was an I-9 issue.
Let's bring Mr. Bunker into this, because that's what you told me on Monday. So what's the issue between the 1099 and the I-9? What's
workman's compensation and the W-9,
they're separate. They're two totally separate issues. So workman's compensation, if they're on the payroll from the general ledger, it doesn't matter if we issued a 1099 or not. It's on our general ledger. They will look at it. It could be less than $600. We don't issue anyone a 1099 if they didn't earn $600 or more. Mm-hmm. So they still fill out the paperwork, but we don't issue a 1099 unless they, and we'll talk about this in the future, and Cheryl can go into detail on it. Has nothing to do with workman's compensation, really. So there was a miscommunication, obviously, between the chair and whoever he talked to. He didn't talk to me. I don't know that he talked to Cheryl, whoever he talked to, about the W-9 having an effect on the insurance. It's not the case. Or the 1099 on workman's compensation. No effect. So that's a separate issue. That's why they're separate on the agenda.
Yeah. So that was his suggestion was, let's, if the auditor is looking at that and we don't have to issue a 1099, then let's not do it. But then you would come back later, like I said, telling me it wasn't 1099, it was I-9. And I don't even care what it really is. Well, I'm just trying to figure out how can we make it doable for the Family Festival Committee to not start losing, you know, these small performance groups or the car show or the teen party or those kinds of things where these, you know, it's a dad band that gets together once a month and performs and we've hired them, or the car show guy who we pay $250 to. I just want to make it because they've been clear, some of these vendors, that they can't continue with us if we're going to put more of a financial burden on their plate that other cities don't. And so, like I said, the committee just wanted some direction from council. If they are fine using some of their funds to pay that $50 fee, they're fine with going that route.
Don't you think leaving it up to the committee is the right thing to do on that $50? It's only $50, and I'm sure it's sometimes in their budget to spend that.
And actually, we wouldn't be paying it direct. We would not be the ones procuring insurance for them.
Right.
What they need to do is increase the contract, increase.
Exactly.
If they're charging $250, maybe they charge more, or whatever it's going to take for them to go get that insurance, they go get it.
That's right.
But we don't cover their insurance.
Let me ask our insurance agent a question with regards to that. So say someone comes to the city and we pay them $500, right? And our rate was 2 point something? What is it?
2.35.
Okay, so I did the math on $5.99. It's like $13. So is it cheaper to just eat it for $13 or give them the extra $50?
And that's what's before you. You can eat it.
Now, but it puts us at risk.
Understand that if they get hurt during that event, and we went ahead and we just eat it. They're on our insurance.
Right.
They make a $200,000 claim if they fell off
a
ladder.
It's just a risk.
Or whatever. It's a risk. And that's what's in your court. Do you want to cover that risk as a city? And that's okay if you...
No, I think for a difference of $35, I'd make them get the waiver.
It may not qualify for a waiver. It's very narrow. They have to be a sole proprietor. They can't waive coverage for anyone other than themselves.
That's true.
So if they have four people in their group, they are not going to qualify for that waiver.
But we don't know that. I mean, they can always qualify for themselves.
Right.
We don't care. We don't really know how their company is organized. Right. We don't require articles of organization or anything, so we have no idea.
Or the certificate of workers' compensation.
Yeah. So
Mike, this actually relates exactly to the question I've been dying to ask all night. We've talked about large businesses versus small businesses, and then we've said, well, there's an exception for sole proprietors, but I don't think it's true that all small businesses are sole proprietors.
That's true.
No.
Right?
I think it's a cap.
So there may be some small businesses that come to contract with us, and they have two or three people in their company. They're not a sole proprietorship. They're not going to qualify for a waiver. And so it's not a question of, can we just pay them $50 and our liability goes away?
But the issue is...
They need to have workers' compensation insurance. They either need to pay that fee themselves, and I don't know how much that would cost for a small business of three. It could be whatever, right?
I think it's illegal for them not to have workers' comp.
That's my point. If they hire, if they have W-9 employees, they have to provide workman's comp.
I see.
As an owner, you can only be exempt. Is that correct?
Correct,
yeah. I mean, I know. So what if
it's just a band that's coming to play for us, and it's just a neighborhood band? Is this, I mean, I'm assuming they don't have a business, right? So
that's a gray area, I assume.
How does that work?
That's a loose group of people that
if they're getting paid individually
to come to
play. If they're getting paid individually because they're not a company, they're not a you know, I guess in last year's case, they had somebody that represented them.
So they're a collection of sole proprietors?
And they must have had an agent or some...
The band last year had an agent, but we've had bands before. I mean, we have city band just of our residents here, and they're just five guys who get together and perform music sometimes.
So do we need to pay $50 for each one of them?
Each one of those guys could get a waiver. Literally, they could each get a waiver.
But we would have to...
Because they're individuals.
Now, what's the difference between...
It's $250 for a band.
What's the difference between them and someone that's just coming to watch? You know what I mean? We still have liability insurance for those people, too, that the city will cover. If they're just coming to perform and they're not being paid or they're being paid very little, maybe this is the gray area where we say, okay, we could let that slide. I don't know. Because I don't see how you're going to get hurt anyway playing a guitar.
That's the committee's asking from us. Because last year, we did require the band to have coverage. And so are we not, if it's going to be this the small group of people, you know, if it's a 13-year-old who wants to come sing and we're paying her $50, what are we going to do?
I want to be as accommodating as we possibly can and not overextend our exposure. That's my position.
If it's just a group of people getting paid $50, then maybe it's different than a band coming in that's a high-profile band that we're paying $500, for instance. Maybe I'd view those differently. I don't know.
What do you think?
That's why I'm here. The family, so Jerry Ann and Rob Olson are the chairs this year, and the family festival's meeting in a couple of months. They just want direction, so that way if they know how to handle it, and because they've got to start meeting with vendors and start booking things, and they want to know what they're going to be required to do and what we're going to allow.
Okay.
Perhaps I can make a suggestion on how to view this from a paradigm perspective. If you view this as a spectrum, on the one side you have risk, on the other side you have cost. And the question for you as a council is, at what point are you okay assuming all risk or all cost or somewhere in between? And so I think that's the crux of the question. Where do you marry the two, or do you marry them at all? Or do you simply say, no, we're going to wash our hands of it and put all risk and all cost on those people who are coming to contract with us? So if you think of it sort of from that perspective, then it's a question of what's your decision.
Okay, so this is what I'd like to do. I will bring back a proposal for a policy change if we're doing something different than what we did last year. So last year, the city paid the waiver for how many groups? One?
Just the one, the car show.
All right. So at this point, you know, the Family Festival Committee has at their discretion to do the same thing again this year.
Do they?
I don't know why they wouldn't. They did it last year.
They could increase the contract price. We should not be purchasing their insurance for them, but we should increase the contract.
We can't do that. He's got to get it himself.
They got to get their own insurance.
Yes. So this is something that I want to bring back at another meeting. It's not an action item tonight, so
it's just a discussion.
I don't even want to give direction until a few things are narrowed down. So this will be brought back maybe in 2 weeks with a specific recommendation, and then you guys can give direction at that point in terms of what you want to do. Okay? All right. Let's move on. Next item is item number 12, which is an action item on the Lakeshore Trail subdivision. So, Mr. Bunker, are you presenting on this?
Don't we have to?
Are we going to do 11?
I think you
should talk about the W-9 1099.
Do we need
That's
to?
A discussion item.
I thought we just did that.
I don't know if it was covered fully. Okay,
do you guys have
discussion.
Any questions on the 1099 W-9 issue?
Did you have something you wanted to present with that?
Not really. I think it's pretty straightforward.
Okay.
Everyone gets a W-9.
Everyone gets a W-9.
Only people over 600 and over get a 1099.
Yes.
Sounds good. Any other questions?
Okay. Great. I think we did take care of that already. So let's move on to item number 12, which is the Lakeshore Trails subdivision.
Great.
I see Mr. Wilson here. So, David, are you going to start off? And then
let me kick this off. So, Lakeshore Trail Subdivision is a project that is actually started, and majority of the project is actually underway or mostly completed. There is one phase, one portion of the subdivision that is not done, and that's Hunter's Court.
And with the weather that's coming and the different conditions that are out there, a request has been made that we phase this project, and Hunter's Court would be a phase in itself. So they could delay finalizing all the improvements on that for a short period of time. There would still be a bond required, like there is with every other subdivision. And in fact, the bond is there. We would split the bond into phase one, which would include Lake Shore Trails, Bay Hill, and then the rest of the bond would go towards Hunter's Court. So the bond is actually there. The city would be covered as far as public improvements being completed. The projects would enter durability on their own track. So right now, as these improvements on Lakeshore get done, they can actually have an inspection on that and get those improvements started on their durability time frame. And then Hunter's Court, as it gets done, it would have its own durability time frame for that. I was asked if there were other subdivisions in the city that were phased. And quite honestly, I only put a few subdivisions on here that are phased, but almost all subdivisions have been phased in the city. And you can see a list there. There's 6 or 7, 8, and there's more that have been phased. So the request is to approve phasing Lakeshore Trails. You have a map in your packet showing what phase two would look like versus the rest of the project, which would be phase one. Are there any questions with that?
There is. So, Mr. Wilson, do you have an idea in terms of when you're going to start phase two and when it would be completed?
Geneva actually brought in their equipment yesterday, and so the hope is to get asphalt before Thanksgiving, the most asphalt plants.
On phase two?
Yeah. Okay. Our score is really, it's just a bowl. It's not even, there's really not that much to it. But this is just kind of a precaution because we're already, I think, approaching or over our deadline to finish. And this gives us a little wiggle room. There's really a lot of months to it. We hope to be done. We'd love to be done by Thanksgiving, Christmas, but more than likely, because we have to put in this large retaining wall, more than likely it'll be spring before we're done.
So how close is phase one to being done?
Phase one, we passed our final inspection with Bowen Collins. It's a couple of little things that are still need to be discussed. I think we were under the impression that we passed everything we needed to pass for phase one.
Okay, so phase two, you think you'll be paving that before the end of the year?
We hope to.
You hope to. Okay, so that's the beginning. And so when would you anticipate the end?
Yeah, like I said, we could theoretically, because all it is the cul-de-sac no bigger than this room. You know, I mean, there may be a sidewalk that doesn't get done, or, you know, if we can get the asphalt in before freezing temperatures, say most asphalt plants shut down.
Okay.
Couple weeks after Thanksgiving, if we can get the asphalt in, we'll be really happy. If we can get the concrete sidewalks in, we'll get static, but this is basically a request for wiggle room in case we don't get it done. And especially with the retaining wall, it'll probably be April.
April.
To be done with that. Everything's stubbed in because the major headache is done. That was Kane's Road.
Okay.
All the utilities off the table was a super headache. Kilgore claimed they lost money. Our contractor was just so involved, and everyone in this room probably hates us for tying up Canyon Road for so long, but that's all done. It's just a matter of terminating a little bowl.
I understand. Council, do you have any questions? Denny? Daniel?
No.
Okay. There is a suggested motion. Someone like to make it?
Yeah, I'll make a motion to approve the phasing plan for Lakeshore Trail Subdivision, allowing the development and the associated bonds to be split into two phases as shown on the approved phasing plan.
Okay. I have a motion.
I'll second that.
Motion's been seconded. Was that by Mr. Crawley?
Yes.
Okay. Any further discussion? Let's have a vote. Starting from... Mr. Geddes, you have a conflict of interest here, so you'll be recusing yourself.
I recuse myself, yes.
Okay. Mr. Zappala?
Aye.
Mrs. Reese?
Aye.
Mr. Bailey?
Aye.
Mr. Crawley?
Aye.
Motion was unanimous for those voting. Thank you very much.
Mayor Geagy, can I ask a question before we move on?
Yeah.
Can I just go back to the last agenda item for a quick question? Sorry, something Mr. Bunker said intrigued me, and that was how Pleasant Grove handles their strawberry days, which was, I believe they set up a 501c3 or something of that effect. I don't know if maybe that's something that we also want to look at for our Arts Committee and our Family Festival Committee, if that also gets us out of any liability with workers' compensation.
That's precisely why I want a little bit more time.
Okay.
Is to try and figure out if we need to set up a 501c or 501c3-4, whatever it is. But that's what I want to check into.
Okay.
Good. All right. Next item, which is item number 13. This is an action item on Canyon Road interlocal agreement with Utah County and Pleasant Grove City. Mr. Bunker, go ahead.
Mayor and Council, in your packet, you have a interlocal cooperation agreement as prepared by Utah County. This interlocal agreement would improve Canyon Road with asphalt, new asphalt, curb and gutter, drainage improvements, some safety considerations, and take the roadway to more of a conducive road for safety reasons. There's a lot of issues on that road right now, as you know. It would widen some lanes, give some turning pockets at certain intersections. This agreement would use 9.359 million, and that is split between 3.3 million from UDOT. 1.5 million would be transferred by the county from the North County Boulevard project, and then the Mountain Land Association of Governments would also be chipping in on that. So it would be a combined funded project, and that's how the improvements would be made. We have Pleasant Grove has been working with JUB engineers to get a concept design, which was presented to MAG. MAG approved that concept design. The agreement, the crux of the agreement is that the county would take these funds, the county would hire a contractor, they would design it, get a contractor, do the improvements, and then the county would own that road for the next 30 years. At the end of the 30-year term, the county proposes that the city would take the road. And this is an agreement between Pleasant Grove, Cedar Hills, and the county. Cedar Hills would take the road from the canal north to the mouth of the canyon. Pleasant Grove would take the road from the canal south to State Street in Pleasant Grove. And then at that point, the cities would own the road.
Could I just interrupt you for just a second?
You bet.
Because I've been thinking about this a lot, and when you just said that, because of what Pleasant Grove has done between pretty much the city building and the canal, they own half of those houses on some sides of the road. I mean,
yeah.
That's not all Cedar Hills. It's some of it's Pleasant Grove.
Yeah.
So
it's cookie
cutter.
How
do you resolve that issue?
We would have to probably work that out with Pleasant Grove. So the boundary is very, very jagged right through there. There are some parts of that roadway that are Pleasant
several
Grove.
Houses on Canyon Road that are, yeah, PG and several Cedar Hills.
Yeah, yeah. That's another fly in the ointment there.
So if your recommendation is to clean up the boundary, you've got my full support.
Yes. I think we're all in favor of that.
Yeah, I've been working on that forever.
And half of Pleasant Grove's council is too, but
yeah. If that could be worked out, that would be fantastic.
Yeah.
I think it's a safety issue. I've always said that. And it would make sense to clean it up. Okay.
Contained within the agreement is also the provision that the city does certain maintenance aspects of the road even during the 30-year term. So, for instance, snow plowing, pothole repair, striping, storm drain maintenance. Those are the things that the cities would be obligated to do as well. So,
David, who does the snow plow removal and all that stuff right now?
We do now.
Well, the county does it now.
Well, I thought we agreed to just recently.
The county did last year. The county went ahead and did the snow plowing last year on Canyon Road. It was a very light year. I did see the county on the road several times, but in a heavy year, they would be up here a lot more often. Yeah. So with that provision in the contract, the city would be on the hook for somewhere in the neighborhood of $15,000 to $20,000 a year in order just to do those maintenance activities. depending on the severity of a snowstorm or the amount of pothole repair or the amount of storm drain issues that we run into.
So Mike just asked a question to me, and it kind of piqued my memory a little bit too, that we had talked about doing something where we would be in charge of the snow plowing, but we didn't really. Was that ever an agreement, or was that just discussion?
It was discussion. We did talk about that.
So I guess how did it?
Was going to come and do it. We were going to pay him like $300 a swipe.
Well, that's what it was. Pleasant Grove was going to do it. We were going to pay Pleasant Grove for our portion.
So that would still be something we can work out with Pleasant Grove as part of this agreement.
Well, how does
we never did enter that agreement?
We have not yet because we haven't finalized this.
How did that get from that to us owning the road again, though? Because, you know, we've come back four times and talked about this, and every single time we've gauged the interest of our council in owning that road, and it seems like it's been pretty unanimous that we don't want to own that road. So how did we get from that discussion of pitching in on the snow plowing back to us owning the road again? Who's been talking about that? Have we had meetings discussing that? Maybe Mayor Gigi could inform us on that.
On snow plowing?
No, on how did we get back to talking about us owning the road again when we've probably turned that down four times as a council in discussions. Can you kind of walk us through how we got to the point where we're now having a action item to own that road again when we've basically turned it down four times? And now it's coming back a fifth time. I mean, how many times do we have to say we don't want to own that road? You know what I'm saying?
I don't think that, I think our preference would be not to own it.
Right.
The county came back to us with an offer, which we have an obligation to respond to.
Okay.
That's why we're here.
Okay.
And so there's a safety issue, which is being ignored.
Mm-hmm.
And that is that there are drainage areas that are a problem. They pool and freeze in the winter. There was an elderly lady that was driving. She hit the pooled area. She flipped her car, and she was, you know, fortunately fine. But still, there's a safety issue. So, I, to be honest with you, I've seen the council before this. I've seen you be against it. And so early on, when the county started talking about this, then the council said that they weren't for it, and then I saw some residents say that they wanted it, and all of a sudden I saw a couple of council members or three saying, well, we should take a look at this again. So I don't think that you can say that the council is unanimously saying this.
Okay.
And we are responding to a request from the county to do this. And so we had asked them to own this road forever. That was our response to them, and they said no. And so they had started at 20 years, and then they finally agreed to 30 years if the cities would do that. And so the choice is the council. If you can ignore this road and pound your fist and say, we want the county to take a better care of it. County has clearly said that they will take care of it as a county road. So
they haven't even done that, though.
Well, I know why they haven't, because they
keep... You're making my point.
They keep thinking we're going to take it, but we have not...
No, they don't. No, they don't.
Well, that's... I know it's been on the agenda with the county for 2 years at least, and even UDOT knew that it was going to be a project there. But I believe that because they think that they might be able to get us to take it over, they keep postponing. I think if we tell them in firm words, this is your road, and it needs to be taken care of, and in the discussion, they will fix the problems this next spring. I'm confident of that.
Good luck. Knock yourself out.
So can I ask some questions of the agreement? So it says $9.3 million. I know that's coming from UDOT and coming from MAG. It's not coming from the county at all. I know...
There's a portion.
No, there is some.
How much is from the county?
I said $1.5 million.
But you're saying that's coming from North County Boulevard. Is that money that originally came from the state paying the county?
I believe that Utah County, in a negotiation with North County Boulevard when that project was done, Utah County acquired some of those funds, the 1.5.
Where do the funds come from? Which funds did they acquire?
I believe that was in the negotiation for North County Boulevard. So that would have been probably originally UDOT funds, would be my guess.
That's what I thought, too.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they haven't put any skin in the game.
Right. They're UDOT funds and they're MAG funds.
And to be clear, on the MAG funds, the county's position on that is those are county funds. They can allocate those the way
through that MAG funding process.
Through MAG, but they can't do it themselves. They've already been allocated to Canyon Road.
That's right.
This $5 million. Okay, so I know a while ago you and, I don't know if it was Pleasant Grove City Manager or another engineer, had done some studies on what you felt it would cost to do, to upgrade this road. And I thought at the time you felt it was going to be quite a bit more than $9.3 million. Is that still your anticipation?
The improvements that are planned with the 9.3 do not fully complete all curb and gutter and all components of the roadway. It definitely addresses the major points, definitely addresses drainage on the west side of the road, but there are portions on the east side we wouldn't have curb and gutter even still.
Okay.
So it does not fully build the road to a city standard.
But does that include the intersection that's right just south of Cedar Hills Drive on the right-hand side? There's that funny...
Yeah. Kind of hump.
Is that fixing this, or is that
that, that is part of this project? Okay. That intersection.
So yeah. The 9.3 would do a lot of repairs, including some of the drainage, but it doesn't finish the curb and gutter.
That's right.
On the road. Okay, and then
so hold on 1 second. Just so everyone's clear, the way that the MAC process works is they plan for a 10% contingency. So if the project wanted to say we want to take advantage of our 10% contingency, then you have about 900,000 more, and in January you can apply for phase two and work on whatever else that you can't get done.
But then we're up against whatever other applications are going in, so there's not a guarantee that we would get funding for it.
Oh, well, there's never a guarantee of anything in life other than death and taxes, but...
But the $5 million right now is allocated, I'm saying.
It is already allocated.
So, on page, let's see, page 5, it says that we will enter into a utility agreement with the county for all existing and future utilities owned and operated by the entities within the roadway, and that we may include utility projects in conjunction. What do they mean we're entering into a utility agreement with them for our existing utilities?
So for our utilities, they would have the right to have a utility corridor within that right-of-way. Utah County will own the right-of-way. We would have a utility corridor through there for any utilities that we have in that corridor. And that's the existing ones. They would give us that. If we want additional utilities to be installed in that corridor, then we would have to go through them, but they would grant us to do that. They would like us to do those utilities now.
Right.
So, for instance, the sewer on Canyon Road, this is a project that's been on our capital projects plan. Granted, again, it goes back to that issue about every other house being in Pleasant Grove or Cedar Hills. Long term for us and our residents, we need to put a sewer line down Canyon Road. We should be doing that before this project is completed so that the sewer line, which is deeper, gets done first before we put a brand new road on top of it. So what they're saying is you will have the right to do that, cities. You have an easement to do that. We want you to do that now. And the county wouldn't pay for that sewer line. They won't pay for utilities. That would be on the cities.
Right.
To do that.
Which is the case now. Do we not already have a utility agreement for that road?
With UDOT, we had one.
And it doesn't transfer over when the county
developed? They wanted to just make it clear on this agreement.
Okay, and then on page 6, I mean, I know it says that this is a 30-year contract, but they have a 6-month out. They can give us 180 days notice, and we could own this road next year.
And if they do that, then the provision is they would calculate the cost of maintenance for the 30-year term, and they would owe the cities that money in cash up front. Now they could. And that's a sticking point. I mean, if they wanted to walk away and they said, hey, we estimate the cost to be X dollars, we would have to go mediate that. You know, we would have to get somebody to say, no, the true cost over 30 years is X dollars. Right. That could be a big discussion.
Well,
for sure.
I think that because just of the way that they've dealt with us over the last couple of years, I'm wary of their. I mean, they say they're their good faith estimate, and I'm hesitant with that just because they haven't provided a lot of good faith on this project so far. So, my concerns with all of this. Number one, if it goes over $9.3 million, we have to help pay for it, and we really don't have any idea how much the project will actually be.
It hasn't been designed or bid.
So we're asking us to enter into an agreement, taking on some liability for costs when we don't even know what those costs are. And if they're, you know, a couple million dollars higher, where are we going to get that money?
Yeah.
I'm concerned, even with that they own the road, they're still requiring us to invest $15,000 to $20,000 a year in maintenance and law enforcement and debris removal. And again, I don't know where that money's coming from. I really am concerned about the six-month notice where they can just walk away at any point. All of a sudden, we own that road, not 30 years from now, but next year, or in years before the 30. Ben and Mike made the comments of the fact that the way that it's currently divvied up, there are quite a few Pleasant Grove residents north of the canal, but there are no Cedar Hills residents south of the canal. So we're taking on more of the burden of Canyon Road. In addition, I drove it a couple times today, and it appears to me anyway that the portions of Canyon Road north of the canal are much wider than the portions of the road south of the canal, which just means more maintenance and snowplow removal and everything for us that Pleasant Grove doesn't have on their shoulders. But I think the big one for me, so first of all, this was a state-owned road. The county negotiated with the state to swap. They took on that responsibility knowing it was going to be a county road. They negotiated that agreement. We had nothing to do with it. UDOT gave them funds that they were going to use to upgrade the road. MAG has said that they would throw in an additional $5 million. And still the sticking point for me is that day Commissioner Ellerson came to our meeting and said he would reject the MAG funds if we don't take ownership of this road. It doesn't hurt them at all to accept those MAG funds and to get this road fixed to the way it needs to be fixed to make it safe for Pleasant Grove and Cedar Hills residents. And he just brushed that off as, well, he will reject it, and basically they'll just do a cruddy job with the $4.5 million they have instead of really upgrading it. So it felt like they're trying to bully us into taking on this by threatening us with rejecting the funds from MAG. So I've talked to some residents on this. I think there is this big concern that if we take on a road of that magnitude, which we talked about the maintenance expenses, we talked about needing a snowplow, that we don't even have the snowplow or the capacity to snowplow right now. Where is all this money coming from? Immediately, if they do continue owning it for 30 years and we just keep the maintenance cost of $15,000 to $20,000, maybe more if we need to buy new snowplows and such, or even nearer term if they decide to get out of the contract with their 6-month termination clause. So my personal feeling is that the county owns the road. They negotiated a trade. They should take the responsibility for it.
And a big elephant in the room is, hey, 30 years is going to come and go quickly. We all feel like it goes faster every year. In 30 years, what happens? What's our liability in 30 years to maintain that road? All of a sudden, we're talking $100,000 plus every year. So that needs to be...
That's $100,000 in today's dollars.
That's $100,000 in today's dollars. And so, that could be a lot more depending on asphalt costs and things like that in the future. That's a big road. And it doesn't just serve Cedar Hills. It serves a regional area.
It's not. I know the county has said multiple times that it's a city road and that's why they don't want it. But that's just simply not true. It's a major access into American Fork Canyon. It is a regional road. And the other thing, somewhere in the contract, I didn't circle it, but it talks about how if at some point it needs to be widened to anticipate or to handle more traffic, that they'll talk to us about that. Yeah. We have to be on the hook for that, even though we don't get to determine whether or not it needs to be widened if it needs to accommodate more traffic. So it feels to me that in this agreement they recognize by the way they're expecting this road to be maintained or utility right-of-ways or the potential to make it bigger that they recognize it's not a city road, but they want the cities to pay for it.
Mm-hmm. I think the worst thing we could do is be wishy-washy with them, because I think that they will. They have to plan for the spring what they're going to do, and that means they need to know really soon who's going to be in charge of it, who's going to be in charge of the project, and it is their road. It's going to be them that's in charge of it, in my opinion. I think we've got to tell them that we're just not interested and fix the road. It's your road. Fix it. Please don't come back to us. Get it fixed. That's my opinion, and I think we've got to tell it to them quickly so they can plan for spring.
So the only thing I need to know then, do you want to turn down the offer as it is, or do you want to respond to it and say, I don't like the 180 days out, I don't like this, that. So that's what I need to know.
That's buying signals. When you do that, when you say let's mess around with the contract, you're saying you're sending a buying signal that you're going to take the road. I don't have any desire to take the road personally. I don't know how anyone else feels.
That's fine. So what the council as a body, not individually, right, but what the council as a body needs to do is say, is this road important to us?
Are there safety issues that need to be addressed? All of these things, and say, it's important enough to us that we're going to respond to the county and ask them to change the contract to something you're comfortable with, or just say, no, we don't want it, it's yours, and then deal with it however they choose to maintain it.
So another suggestion, I actually called a Pleasant Grove City Council member today. She and I had a long talk, and she was surprised by some of the information that I had. And one of the questions she asked was, why does the county want us to take over and shovel this road? And I gave her my opinion based on Commissioner Ellerton's response to us that day, that he felt it was a city road and not a regional road. It wasn't. It was only Pleasant Grove and Cedar Hills residents majority using the road, which she also felt was not the case. And so another option, I'm kind of surprised. I mean, I know you and Scott Darrington have been talking, but since both cities are on the hook for this massive project, I'm kind of surprised the two councils haven't sat down and talked this through. I mean, they're asking us to take on the ownership and responsibility for it, yet we've never sat down with that council and had a joint session to talk about any of this.
So I understand that they're all in favor for it, but
that's not true.
That's not true. That's not what I was told today.
Okay.
No. I've talked to one of them too that's against it. Okay. A different one than Jenny.
So let me rephrase this then. I hear that the majority of the council is for it in Pleasant Grove. So if you want to meet with the Pleasant Grove City Council, that's fine. If you want to respond to the county with an offer that's different, that's fine. If you want to turn it down, that's fine also. But you need to give some direction.
I would propose that we say that we are out of this negotiation. I'd make that proposal now. I suggest that we say that we are out of this negotiation, that it's a county road, and that they need to upgrade it and make it safe. But we're out of the negotiation, and Pleasant Grove can negotiate for their portion of it with the county. But I would suggest that we say we're out, so it's very clear, so they can get on planning on the spring projects. I'd like to make that proposal.
Okay, Mr. Crawley's making a motion, which we have to address, which is to turn down the offer, tell them thanks but no thanks, no response to their offer other than saying, it's your road, you maintain it. Right?
That's what I'd suggest.
So, I have a motion. Is there a second to it? There can be discussion still, but I need to know if there's a second.
What? Is that a motion?
That is my motion. Mm-hmm.
You got to make it an official motion.
I'd like to make a motion that we turn down the offer and make it very clear that we are not interested in negotiating regarding a future ownership of this road. And make it clear enough so they know that they need to plan on their own for our portion of the road for the spring projects that need to happen on it.
Okay, I have a motion. Is there a second?
Could I ask Rob to amend it a little
sure.
bit?
Sure.
So I tend to agree with everything about that, except that I think we shouldn't just shut down negotiations with them. I think it's worthwhile to... I would like to see them spend the money instead of just dangling out there like a carrot. I'd like to see them spend the money, see what we get for the $9 million, and then, I mean, maybe we could enter an agreement next year with them. But I'm sick of what they do. They just dangle the money out there and then says, hey, you guys have to take this road one way or another, or, hey, we're going to pull back half of that money. I don't care. And I personally feel that long term, the city needs to own Canyon Road. That's my personal opinion. And, you know, how we get there, I don't want to burden the city with additional costs, but I think it just makes sense that at some point in the future, we own Canyon Road. I mean, we control both sides of it. I mean, I did a project on it. I put several hundred feet of curb and gutter along that road and paved it and made it safer personally. And I just think it down the road, it's one of those things that we need to have a little bit of control of. I've heard Councilman Zapala mention that, you know, maybe we could put a median in it. I mean, there's some things we could beautify our city with that road. I don't know that the time's right. I'm sick of them, you know, I don't want to cut off negotiations, but I think we ought to force them to spend the money, not put us on the hook for any overages,
at this point, spend the money, fix the safety issues, as the mayor says, and then maybe let's talk again.
Okay, Mr. Crowley, you were kind of nodding there. Are you agreeing with him?
No. Can I address that? I think that if we leave it out there that we're going to negotiate with them, then they will do the bare minimum, and then dangle some more money out next year. I think they need to realize that they're responsible for that road, and then they'll think about long term. How are they going to upkeep this road to make it safe? If we continue to say we'll talk to them next year, then that doesn't motivate them to take full ownership of this road and make it a good long-term road for them. If they think that they might be able to get rid of it next year, they'll just do the bare minimum so they can get rid of it next year, and we'll have all the repairs.
I have not been able to speak yet.
Okay.
If you notice, I'd like to say something at some point on this issue.
What's this?
Oh yeah, it hasn't been seconded.
No, that's right. It's died for lack of a second.
Yeah. And Mr. Geddes was thinking about it.
Mr. Geddes wanted to propose a change to it.
I'm still on this. Just be patient. So
I've been really patient.
Mr. Crowley has not accepted my opinion, so
we have a motion that has officially died now.
Okay.
So I want to make one point, and then you can speak, which is that Mr. Crowley, the county has said what they're going to do with this road. Mm-hmm. You may not have been listening, but they've said what they're going to do.
Which is?
They're going to maintain it as a county road,
right?
Which is not at the same standard as a city road.
Right. But couldn't we put curb and gutter where we want to, and it'd be on our dime, but we could do that.
You could try and strong arm them and yell at them all you want.
Right.
Knock yourself out. I think that they have stated clearly, but there is a new county commissioner who will be sworn in January.
True.
And so he may have a different point of view. So, Daniel, go ahead.
Thank you. So, I tried to organize my thoughts here because I had a lot saved up. I've been trying to get in for a while. I agree a lot with what Mike just said. Basically, my suggestion would be that we send a very clear message to the county that we expect them to fix this road properly. You've mentioned a number of safety issues, Mayor. And I entirely concur with you that there are some serious safety issues with this road. If there are safety issues, the county ought to fix their road and remove these safety issues. It's not a question of should there be curb and gutter. It's a question of there needs to be a safe road, and that includes draining the road properly. If they can't handle that, then they ought not to be in the county government business, and they should get some new commissioners in there to run the county. So I kind of agree with Mike that I would say, my long-term vision is I would like for there to be either city ownership of the road or city-county partnership of the road. Maybe the city owns the road but has an agreement with the county where they provide us some additional maintenance fees because there is such a large amount of through traffic on the road. I don't know what that looks like in the future. All I know is I'm not willing to be bullied into taking over the road in order for them to spend this money. I want to send the message that, no, you spend the money first. You get this road fixed the way it should be. You have $9 million, of which only $1 million is yours, and that came from UDOT originally, I believe. It's a really, really good deal for them. They should be fixing this road properly. Once they fix that road properly, sure, come talk to us and talk to us about a partnership. Don't try and bully us just because we're a smaller town. Come talk to us about how we can properly fix this road to make it work for us. If there are some things on our list that are wants as opposed to needs, like a median, like a bike lane, great. Let's talk about how to fund those in a joint way, and let's get a better road for all of our residents as well as for the residents of the larger area. So I would like to propose that we essentially tell the county, you have a responsibility to fix the safety of this road. We expect you to fix it. We want you to spend all of the MAG money, all of the $9.5 million. It's not your money, so it's not hurting you to spend that money. Then once that is spent and you show good faith effort to rebuild the road properly, come talk to us. And at that point, we would be willing to entertain some discussions about the future of that road going further.
Okay.
Motion.
That's my motion.
Is that an official motion?
That was an official motion.
Do you want to, why don't you make
I
that official?
I move that we tell the county that we expect them to spend the $9.5 million to fix the road properly because there are significant safety issues with it. And after they spend that money and fix the road properly, then they can come back and have joint meetings with us and Pleasant Grove to talk about the future of that road and what it should look like.
I'll second that.
Okay. There is a motion that's been seconded, and as part of discussion, I will say I'm not sure that the county can just take that money and use it, and I'll tell you why. Because the money was awarded to a Pleasant Grove Cedar Hills sponsored project. I'll have to figure out what the process is, because I believe, and I could be wrong on this, I believe that if Pleasant Grove and Cedar Hills say we no longer want that project, the money goes back into a pool and any city can apply for it. So it isn't as if you can take the 9.5 million or so, then you add another 900,000 in for the contingency, so you're at 10.5 or something like that. Actually more than that. And almost.
Don't worry about the exact number.
No, it's important. It's 10.8 million or something like that. And so anyway, I don't believe that that money can just be taken by the county because they were not a sponsor of the project.
So you're saying the way the money was arranged, the only way it could be spent was by the cities themselves?
By the sponsors of the project.
Which are who?
Like I just said, Cedar Hills and Pleasant Grove.
Why was here?
County for that project that was approved by Cedar Hills and Pleasant Grove.
When Matt was here, I asked them specifically that, if it could still be used, and they said it could be reconfigured and used the same way by the county. And that was a specific question, because we had Mag here along with Commissioner Ellerson last year.
I'm happy to have you look into that, Gary.
No, I can look into
figure
it.
Figure that out.
I don't need any help.
No, I know. I didn't say I would help you. I said I'm happy to have you do it.
And so I will look into
it. I don't want to help you.
I think that there is a process that may not allow the county to just
sure.
do that.
Let's hear about
and
it.
And so we'll figure that out. So anyways, Mr. Zappala has made a motion. It has been seconded. We need to vote on that.
Well, I have a discussion.
There's some discussion.
So if there's a concern that MAG can then take back that money, let's say Pleasant Grove, that we're not on the same page with Pleasant Grove, and they say one thing and we say another, and then MAG just says, okay, it died, so we're just going to reabsorb those funds and reallocate them. Another suggestion I think we could do is to set up a meeting in January with the Pleasant Grove Council, the Cedar Hill City Council, and the new county commissioners, and just lay everything out on the table with the expectation that the councils are going to vote on this by our second meeting in February, and there will be a final decision at that point. But like I said, we've never had a discussion jointly with the Pleasant Grove Council. There is a new county commissioner coming on. It was Commissioner Ellertson who came to our meeting, who has been the most opposed, and he's no longer going to be on the commission. Sure. So maybe we can have a more productive conversation with them, with the new commissioner and with both city councils involved.
The only concern I have with that is that makes it so that we don't have any closure right now, and it makes it so they can't really plan for the spring, that they can't get the project going, which means that they might have to postpone it till the end of the summer. And honestly, I think the county is worried because this is a project that should have been done a couple of years ago for safety reasons. I think they're legitimately concerned that if it doesn't get resolved soon, then, you know, if we just tell them they own it, then they can work with what they have and they will fix the safety issues. I'm very confident of that because they're concerned about it. But if we leave it in limbo till January, that means that it's going to be an unsafe road longer. They won't fix the safety issues. I asked Commissioner Bill Lee today, I said, what if we postponed 2 weeks? Would that hurt the project? And he said, no, that wouldn't. But he is concerned if it goes much more than that, that they can't get the safety issues fixed in a timely enough manner. It puts them at risk as the owner of the road. And so I'm concerned that I like the proposal as it was. But anyway.
What was his approach to the road?
I think anyone from the county is going to want to push the cost off to us. So his approach was to try to get us to own the road. But I could tell through the conversation, especially talking about delaying the vote, that they are very concerned about the safety of it too. And it has been on the top of the list of the county for fixing, and it's been on UDOT's radar for 2 years, I know, because I know people at UDOT. And I think it's just the negotiations that's stopping it from getting fixed, and the ambiguity of whether the cities are going to take it or not. That's why I drew a hard line, because I don't think there should be any ambiguity, or else it's going to keep delaying it. I don't like the risk. I don't like the safety issue. And so that's why I drew the hard line and said, we just need to back out of the negotiations, tell them it's their road and fix it. I do like what Daniel said. I would vote for that too, because that still tells them they're in charge of it until they fix it, so that they can move forward. I just don't want there to be ambiguity going forward, so that it doesn't get done in a timely manner as soon as possible, because I am worried about the safety also.
But if we voted on it in February, does that not give them time to start in spring?
So they are under a crunch to get it designed through the winter, and it'll take months and months to get it designed. So,
but they can design it no matter what we decide if they're planning on spending the $9.3 million.
They could. They could still go through with the design and pay to get it designed. But I think they want to know if the cities are on board taking the road. That's the ultimate thing that they're after, is to know if the cities want to take this road right now. So
Pleasant Grove is not voting on it tonight.
I don't know.
Yeah, they have it as a discussion item only.
Yeah.
So I would suggest that we try and get this finished before the end of the year. And so...
Well, we have a second in motion. Can't we vote on that?
We're still having a discussion.
Okay.
And so I would suggest that I will speak with Mayor Daniels and see if his council is open to and available for a work session meeting, perhaps in 2 weeks, or a special meeting if we need to have one. And because I think that they have meetings every week, do they not? Pleasant Grove. Every Tuesday night.
Either a council meeting or a work session.
So that may mean that we work on their schedule and we hold a special meeting to go be with them. Y'all on board with that?
I don't personally think it makes any sense if we're not going to include the new county commissioners from next year. So if you want to do it this year, then I would say it's not worth it. Because we're not changing Ellerson's
mind. I would agree.
We're not going to change Ellerson's mind.
Yeah, I don't mind Jenny's idea of having a joint meeting if it's with the new county commissioner.
So the county commissioner and the Pleasant Grove Council.
Yeah.
But not until January when there's a new county commissioner.
Okay, so I have a motion. And do you want to incorporate what Mrs. Reese is saying about deadlines? It's your motion.
I was just giving an alternate suggestion. But.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm perfectly open to tabling it for now and saying let's wait and talk to the new county commissioner and see what their flexibility is.
So you're pulling your motion, or you're changing your motion to tabling. Because your first motion was pretty
Yeah, I understand what the motions were that I had made.
Okay.
I guess I'd like to know what Mike and Ben think of those two options.
So I like Daniel's proposal. I think that Cedar Hills, with this proposal, is getting the short end of the stick by far. I believe that the safety issues that need to be addressed are the majority located in Pleasant Grove boundaries. If you look at a map, it's their areas. We might have a little bit, but for the most part, I don't like it how it's written. So I like how Daniel, and I like his second. I kind of look at it like, if I was going to sell my house, would I just leave it in disarray after raising six kids in it and just hope that the next buyer would come and give me top dollar? Or would I come in and say, you know, put new carpet, new this, new that, and then try to negotiate the price? Now, I wasn't around for Ellerson in that discussion, but what I see out there is, hey, you got this ugly road and we want to give you this little bit amount of money and you take care of the rest. And that just doesn't work for me. Now, if they come in and said, we are going to upgrade this road, just like Daniel was mentioning, and look at all the bells and whistles we're giving to you guys, and we're going to XYZ it out, and it is going to be just pristine. I mean, we don't know what we're getting. Jenny brought up it could be 180 days after. They could just say, hey, thanks for whatever. And we guesstimate that the cost is only going to cost $100,000 for you guys to, and they can tie it up a lot longer than we can tie it up with their resources. I 100% behind Daniel's motion.
Okay. Any other comments?
So I thought the motion was withdrawn.
Oh.
No, I'm thinking about withdrawing it. I'm curious what you think.
I can't read the whole thing.
I'm willing to table it.
Which is a totally different motion.
Right.
And so are you going to withdraw your motion without it being voted? Or actually, it's been motion. Hold on. So there's been a motion. It's been seconded. We have discussion. We need to vote on it.
Right.
Okay. So and then if you guys want to vote it down, that's fine. So let's start with Mr. Geddes.
Nay.
Mr. Crawley.
Yay.
Yay.
Nay.
Yay. Mr. Bailey.
Aye.
I didn't hear the vote so far.
So it's nay, aye.
Mrs. Reese.
Aye.
Daniel.
Aye.
So I think the ayes have it. 3-2.
4-1.
4-1. Okay. So the motion's been so your motion has gone through.
Yes.
So it is not tabled as you wanted to do a moment ago.
As I was considering a moment ago.
Okay. All right. So then we will prepare a document saying everything that you want the county to do, because that's what your motion was. Present it to them, and then, but Pleasant Grove will be in the loop with this as well. And so it will be presented to them, and they may respond back before the end of the year while the current county commissioners are there, or they may do it at the beginning of the year.
And the new county commission can feel free to come to us with a different proposal.
Yes. And so that's what we will do. Okay.
Can I just ask that she read that motion back how it's written?
I can't get the whole thing.
We'll have to go to the tape.
The gist
of it was to go to the county, tell them we would like them to fix the road first because there are significant safety issues with it. They should not skirt their responsibility to fix it. Once they have it fixed, we would welcome having them come back and having joint meetings with Cedar Hills and Pleasant Grove and the county commissioners to talk about the future of that road.
Right.
Okay, very good. So let's move on now. We've got a discussion. This is item number 14. On the Cedar Hills Care Tax, Proposition Number 6, which is on the ballot this year. So, Mr. Brunker, go ahead.
Mayor and Council, we have the Care Tax Proposition Number 6. It will be on the countywide ballot for Cedar Hills citizens to vote on. State Code 59-1-1605 requires that the taxing entities, in our case, our city, allow for a public meeting allowing equal time to discuss arguments in favor of and against the said proposition. In your packet, you have the voter information pamphlet for Proposition Number 6. This is how it would read on the county ballot. In there, you have the argument for the Proposition Number 6 and the argument against Proposition Number 6. The argument for proposition was prepared by the city, passed through our attorney. The argument against Proposition Number 6 actually was prepared by Rob Crawley, and so that is also in your packet. And this is an open discussion. The council can discuss this openly. Also, the council, the mayor has the ability to take comments from the public as well.
Okay, so the care tax, as you all know, is a tax that is used for arts, recreation, things like that, and so it has been helpful to our city in many ways. So, discussion in terms of, is there anyone from the body, not the council, but in the audience that wants to speak on this? If not, council, what are your thoughts on this?
David, if I remember correctly, it generates about $40,000 a year in revenue for us.
Approximately.
A little bit more.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, just from my notes, I talked to many people about this. I am encouraging residents to vote for the care tax. It's a tax that we're currently paying, so they're not going to see an increase from what they're currently paying in sales tax because we're already collecting care tax right now. It's just that it's expiring. It's a 0.01% on sales tax, which means for every $10 someone spends in the city, we assess a one penny tax. Those funds go directly towards the recreation in our arts community, in our community. Some of the things that we've used it for since I've been on the council anyway is we built the basketball court at Heritage Park. We use funds for the basement of this community center. We used funds to install a bathroom at Mesquite Park. The arts committee uses it for some of their events, including the date night that we were just talking about, the annual date night, the art contest that they have during Family Festival. And I feel overwhelmingly one of the things that we hear, and upcoming, we're planning on using some care tax funds for Bay Hill Park and also for Heritage Park improvements in this upcoming fiscal year. So I feel overwhelmingly that we hear from residents all the time that they love our parks and trail system. They love recreation opportunities for kids. These are, every time we survey residents, by far the things that they hit, number one and number two, are those, the recreation opportunities, the parks and trail system. We even get feedback from other communities about how much they enjoy our parks and trail system. And so it's not a lot of money, except it's about $40,000 a year in revenue, but we still have parks and trails on our capital improvements plan that we want to finish. We still have recreation opportunities that we're exploring for kids that may not be into sports, and we want to look for other opportunities for them to be involved in our city. So I am encouraging people to vote for it, as it does help in that those arts and recreation programs.
Any other thoughts?
I would echo everything Jenny said. I really strongly support this. The residents clearly support it. They voted for it several times.
I'll be voting for it, so personally. So I like it. I agree to it. I just read your rebuttal on that, and I can completely understand where you're coming from. But personally, I think me and my family, we benefit more from it than we would without it. So. Personally, I'll be going for it.
Mr. Crawley, what are your thoughts?
My thoughts are I'm totally in favor of parks in the city, and so I would not say that I'm suggesting we don't do Bay Hill Park or that we don't do any parks. But I don't necessarily want us to tax it through businesses, and I think that even though it is a small amount, small amounts add up, and so I'd just say I'd fund it through a different way than an additional tax like this. But anyway.
Okay. Mr. Geddes, you have any thoughts?
Yes, I'm just 100% in favor of it. And
okay.
I respectfully disagree with Mr. Crawley.
Thank you. All right. So we were supposed to go into exec session, but Mr. Bromley's not here. So I don't need a motion to go into exec session. And we'll invite him back.
Can we talk about that a little bit? We've invited him two or three times, and he hasn't come.
Yeah.
Is there something we can do about this?
Other than twist his arm again?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And so we thought we had a commitment.
Okay.
So do we need to look at changing agents?
That's what I'm saying. If this is really delaying, and I think we've passed a prime season for selling this project, because now going into the winter, it may not be as much of a time that people are looking. And we've had several people really interested, but we're not getting any feedback. So I don't. You're the one that communicates with him, Mayor Geege. Maybe you need to communicate that we are getting a little frustrated that we're not making progress.
Let me have a conversation with him.
Okay.
And I'll let him know of your frustration. Okay.
Thanks.
All right. I will take a motion to adjourn.
I move that we adjourn.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion
Mr. Geddes
seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? We are done. Thank you.